Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode, bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. And this episode is an insanely special episode because I have with me today an editor, and not just any editor, but this editor has been my editor for my last six books. And not only have we been working together in email for about, well, it feels like forever now, but this is actually the first time I'm actually speaking with her, and I'm bringing all of you in, get to listen now, because this is the way the modern world works. We get to talk to each other all the time without actually really talking to each other. It's amazing. Technology is something. Anyways, welcome, Miriam, to our podcast. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Esther. It's an honor to be here.
Oh my goodness, it's such a pleasure. I am so excited. I've been looking forward to this since you said yes, so yay. So just to give everyone a little bit of context, can you please tell us how you got into editing? How you became an editor? How did you get into editing?
So it was an interesting journey. When I was a kid, I kind of dreamed that I'd be a writer because I started reading novels when I was five. Full-length novels, and I always wanted to be a writer. And over time, I kind of realized I don't have that skill. Like, I'm a decent writer, I can write papers, but having that whole development and that whole creativity process is not a gift that I have. But I did discover that I'm very, very good at helping other people develop their thoughts and their writing. And when I realized that that's actually a job, I was really excited. I was like, I can turn my passion into a career. And I actually met with an editor at the ALA convention my first year of college. And I talked to her about how do you get into this. And she said, you know, you don't really need a degree. It gives you legitimacy, but you don't really need it. What you need is to understand how stories work. You need to be reading, be keeping up with the trends, be keeping up with the times, modern literature, and just know how things go. I looked at her and I was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
editing is a little bit of a competitive field. So I kind of just sent my resume and cover letter to 30 or 40 groups one summer, just saying, hey, I just want experience. And someone got back to me and I got an internship that summer. And then I started working for other publications, and I ended up with Melange, and that's how I met you.
And here we are. Well, that's interesting because as an editor, what do you have to send out besides your experience? Because for a writer, I can send out a story and someone can read that story and say, hey, I feel like she's got something here. I think there's something to her writing. But as an editor, you can't send out someone else's writing and say, oh, I fixed this up, because you don't really know. You don't really know how much the editor contributed unless you're actually on the backside of things, right? Unless you're behind the scenes of things.
That does get a little bit touchy. I have had people say, oh, send us examples of what you've edited. Send us the first version and the last version. I've said, you know, I can't do that.
Right.
There are rights issues. I can't give you what you want. But most of the time they actually ask for a writing sample just to show that you do understand how language works. Or they'll give you an editorial test where they'll send you out like a 3-page story or a blurb and say, fix this up, and then they're like, oh, you caught this and this and this and this and this, you missed these other things, but, you know, you're good enough, that's something that a line editor would get, or, oh, you caught that was nice, and that's actually what Melange did. They sent me a test,
right,
and I passed, and I was welcomed aboard.
Oh, awesome, and here we are. Well, that's a good point, because what is the difference between a line editor and proofreading? What would be versus content editing, which we'll get to next, but a line editor versus a proofreader, is there that much of a difference between the two?
It really depends on the house, the publication that you're working for. Often they're grouped together, but a lot of that goes down into formatting, into grammar, making sure that things make sense grammatically. I will be honest, sometimes I do miss commas. I'm not perfect. and I'll get feedback from that. But it's really just fixing it up, making it shine and sparkle.
Right,
primarily content development, which is what I like.
Right. So what? So just for everyone listening, what would be a content editor or content development?
Oh, Esther, you know all that.
Oh, yes, I do. I can testify to this.
Content editing is making sure, really, that the story and the characters make sense. It's continuity. It's character development. It's world building, depending on the type of story that you're having. It's all of that background information and making sure that throughout the story, everything is consistent. So, for example, in Silhouettes, the first book that I worked with you on,
right,
we were talking about that there are these ghosts laying around, and I said, you know, if ghosts are a thing and these spirits kind of hang around after they die, why aren't there more of them?
Yep.
That's just a hole in that story that was wide open. And you were like, that's a good point.
Yeah. And you
Story worked even without that. It was a good story and it progressed. So it's not that things didn't make sense, but it was a development of something that you already started.
Right. And actually, some of the feedback I've gotten from that book has been one of these other, like, silhouette-y ghost characters that I added in, the guy who was, like, the organ donor, and I think you had liked it when we added that in, but most feedback that I get is that they like that guy that I stuck in there, even though he only showed up for a page, I think, and that happened because they're like, hey, where are the rest of them? So, yay. That was something that worked. Yeah. Well, actually, just as a side thing, do you see yourself, or as an editor, do you have to, do you say, I edit specifically either these kinds of genres or this kind of audience, or is it, give me a story and I will make it, like, I'll make it happen. I'm going to make that better.
I can do any of them. I've done fantasy, I've done sci-fi, I've done women's lit. I accidentally signed up for an erotica novel once. That was interesting.
Yeah.
that was very interesting. But no, I can really do any of that. Certain things I'm more familiar with, primarily myself, I do tend to read fantasy and sci-fi novels. So if someone throws me a historical fiction book, there might be nuances to the writing of that genre that I don't know. And when that happens, I'll often do research into finding out what the trends are for that genre at the time, just so I can make sure that it is consistent with other things, that it's what the publication is looking for.
Right.
I have had my supervisor, when I've picked up books, say, okay, Miriam, this is, like, particularly for the erotica book, she knows that I'm not as familiar or I'm not as comfortable with erotica, and she said, don't take out all of the sex scenes, okay? Something that this book is wanting.
Right.
And I didn't.
Right, they're supposed to be there. Yeah.
But there are different genres that I am more familiar with and more comfortable with.
Are these also the genres that, well, you say you do tend to read sci-fi and fantasy, so you do you like to edit what you read, and are you also specific, like, if you're editing fantasy, are you also going to be reading fantasy, or you're going to try to read something else during that time so it doesn't kind of cross over in your brain?
No, my personal reading is different from my work reading. Yeah, I'm not going to necessarily merge or cross over with them.
Right.
If I'm in the middle of a good series, I'm not going to stop and say, oh, well, I'm reading a Western set in the 1930s. I need to pick up more of those. No.
Right, right.
I'm still going to read.
Right.
I'm in the middle of the series. This is getting finished.
Yeah, that's, well, yeah. So now also, when you do get a manuscript for editing, like, what is your first step at that point? Like, you're not going to get this, you got this book now and you got to do something with it. So what's the first step now in the process for you?
For me, I kind of skim through the first 10 to 30 pages just so I get the feeling of where the story is going. Get a little bit of a feel for the characters before I start editing anything. I want to make sure that, you know, something happens in the first two pages and I say, oh, well, that doesn't make sense, and I change it. And then I come back on page 15 and I say, oh, shoot, that original line or phrase or thing that the author put in, that actually does make a lot of sense.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure that there's consistency throughout, and I'm very particular. I don't want to force an author into development down a track that they don't want.
Right.
Even when I disagree with them, I don't want to force them there. So that that is definitely the first step. Other than formatting, obviously, just making sure that making everything a single space so it doesn't take 700 pages
right.
on a Word document. That's just awful.
Yeah.
And then as I go through, I do try to make notes in different areas of things that might become relevant later on, and I do jump back and forth kind of finding out, oh, this one edit from page 3, which did seem odd then, it actually relates to something that happens on page 47. And then I'll compare the two of those and see, okay, well, which way is this development going? How has the character changed from page 3 to page 47? Do I change page 3? Do I change page 47?
Right.
You know, where have we been going?
Is there a minimum or maximum amount of edits that you'll give to a manuscript before you're like, okay, it's ready? Or is there just a point where you're like, I know we're not going to do anything more with this. Now it's ready to go out. Or what is that point? guess it depends.
It depends. I've had books that, you know, we go through 2 or 3 edits, and I call them edits of, you know, I get the manuscript, that's edit 1, and I send it to the author to check out, and then they get it back to me with their comments, and that's edit 2. And I've had books where we only had 3 edits, and it was done.
Right.
And they either didn't need much development, or the author was just impossible to work with, and I didn't want to argue with them. That's happened.
Oh, man.
But I've also had books that took, I think the record is 28.
Oh, wow.
Just going back and forth. And the first few edits are obviously the most intense.
Right.
They take the longest because not only am I doing a general sweep for all of the grammar, making sure quotation and marks are there, commas, periods, all that stuff, but also the content. And it can get very, very difficult for authors to see that.
Right, well, because you've looked at the document so many times already, you need to get out of your own head.
Please.
If you have an author that is being hard-headed, and I'm not going to say which category I fall into, but there may have been hard-headed moments on my end. How do you deal? Because I'm assuming most authors, it does not end in, okay, I can't work with them anymore. You do find a way to work with them. So, what do you do about that? Because I don't know if the author is being hard-headed because they're hard-headed, or if they're just like, no, she's changing everything that I wrote, you know.
A lot of that, actually, I fall back to some of the advice that the first editor I worked under at an internship gave me. And she gave me, her name was Michelle Daughter. She worked at Design, or however you pronounce it. She gave me a few really, really great pieces of advice. One, as an editor, my primary job is not to the publication, and it is not to the author, even though a lot of authors think that my job is to work for them.
Right.
She said, your job is to be the first line of defense for the reader. If you as a reader don't like something, it doesn't make sense to you, you need to tell the author that. Because you are the first external reader who is looking at this book and judging it.
Right.
And the other thing that she said is, you know, authors can be delicate creatures. When you get a manuscript, this is something that they've been working on often for years. This is a baby. They've been nurturing it. They've been taking care of it. They've been changing it. And they give it to you, and you need to be very kind to them. You need to be very careful, because if you just slash everything, then that can really hurt, because this thing that they've developed until they thought that was perfect, and they give it to you, and you say, actually, a lot of this is flawed. We need to be very, very careful with authors, particularly new authors. So there is a point in time, and I'm not going to say it's happened with you, but, you know, where I say, look, I don't like this word choice or this phrase or this piece of a scene. I don't think it marks well with the character development. At a certain point in time, it's the author's work.
Right.
It's not mine.
Right.
And that is, to me, one of the most challenging parts of being an editor, that I put in a lot of work and then it's not my final say and somebody else's final say of how they want it to go.
Right.
And I could dig my heels in and make everybody's lives miserable, but I will lose.
Right.
Because it's not my book.
Right. Yeah, well,
I have been taken off. One of the first books I worked on, I was taken off. The author requested that I get taken off of the work because I strongly disagreed with her reading and development of a character.
Right.
I said that he was clearly deranged and crazy, and she said, no, he's just lovesick. I was like, lovesick people don't throw their wives down the stairs and kill them.
No.
And she got very defensive and very upset, and I got taken off the work, which is fine.
You know, right,
as,
right.
As an author, you need to defend your work as well while somebody else is reading into it and taking things apart. And that does happen sometimes. It hurt, honestly, to get kicked off of that.
Right.
But, yeah, it's not my baby. Somebody else's.
Right. Well, I could say from an author's point of view, sometimes there are things that are just stuck in your head. And no matter what someone else says to you, you don't hear it because that's the way it makes sense in your brain and you can't see it another way. And then hopefully when you really do trust your editor, sometimes it takes two or three times and you're like, oh, now I do see what you're saying now. I understand it now. And then whether or not you agree with them at that point is another thing. But I think, thank God, for 6 out of 6, I think we did a pretty decent job. Actually, I think we did a pretty good job for 6 out of 6. I'm just gonna boast about that a little bit.
I think we did a good job.
Yeah, I'm very proud. I know for myself that, because for my first two books, from first duology, I had a different editor, and then I got you for Silhouettes, and that was like a massive eye-opening moment of, wow, like editors can. Because my first editor she's really nice, and I don't like, and it was, I think she was good for my first novels because that's me coming in and learning a little bit, and then all of a sudden I got you, and that was like going from a level, like trundling along from like a level 5 to like a level like 5,000. So that was a big eye-opening moment. But I can look back now that even the times I don't want to punch the computer screen, I say like, oh, this all, look at where I've come as a writer now, because you're forcing me to question and just not say, well, I'm the writer, so I say so, right? I think 9 times out of 10, I think each time you're like, you could say this because you're the writer and you say so, or you can actually follow story logic. And I think 9 times out of 10, I was like, fine, I'll follow the story logic, fine. Because you are big on logic. That is probably you're really, I know from working with you, you're like, logic is everything.
I like characters that make sense. That's what it comes down to. I majored in English literature and developmental psychology. So I like characters that make realistic sense.
Was that intentional that you realized that those two would complement each other someday, or those are your two interests
I kind of figured I'd work as an editor part time, and then I'd go back to school and become a juvenile psychologist. I actually wanted to go into criminal psychology and deal with juvenile delinquents or the foster care system, but then I ended up pregnant. So.
Oh. Mazel tov.
I was like, maybe this isn't a good time to go, you know, $100,000 into debt while pregnant and not able to get out of bed because I'm being horribly sick. So
that was a good decision.
I'm intending on going back to school in a few years, but not quite yet.
Right. Well, awesome. Yeah, awesome. So now actually going back to story logic for a second. There were, mm-hmm. I remember... especially when we did the End of Ever After series and we have these 5 different kingdoms that we're dealing with plus and then some, there were some times that you'd come back in these emails and with emails about like climates in the area and different things. And I would look at this and I'm like, why are we even going there? So yeah, on the one hand you could say, sure, oh, you know, the editor's getting carried away with herself, which is great because, you know, you're really into the stories. But on the other hand, there is value. Okay, I don't know if everybody actually has to drop a climate map of their kingdoms, but like, how do you see that it impacts the story, whether or not I actually give, you know, a climate description of each kingdom? It is going to affect either certain decisions of the characters. It's going to affect things. So how do you actually see that the more you're going to start creating, looking into all these other things that don't make it in the book, but how do they actually do make it into the book? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for Beautiful to Me, that's the third End of Ever After book with essentially the Little Mermaid story, we spent, I'm going to say, probably a month just talking about, like, mermaid culture and anatomy and climate maps. Like, just a solid month of almost no development in the book. And I was just trying to say, you know, So if you're saying that mermaids live underwater, but they also live on the seafloor, how do you manage that with the fact that sunlight doesn't actually get to the seafloor, so how are they growing their vegetables?
Right.
And you were like, but that's not going in the book. And I'm like, I don't care if it's going in the
book. Right, right.
Part of that has to do with just knowing more of the background of your own character. This is the world-building aspect of developmental editing. Having that world-building in the author's mind or in the editor's mind gives you more information on how the characters relate to each other and relate to the world around them. So not to, you know, go too much into ruining a book for someone that hasn't read it, but in the little, in Beautiful to Me, she ends up going to mountains. And, you know, climbing up that mountain is something that she's never experienced before, even though she may have seen great heights in the ocean.
Right.
Or she may have seen that mermaids like people, that was a thing that we developed a little bit, may have different skin tones or different cultures and live in cooler or warmer climates.
Right.
How does that relate to her experience of going to a snow-capped mountain and seeing snow and seeing the sea from that vantage point? So it gives us more understanding to her character. And also, as a reader who spent a lot of her high school career on fanfiction.net, knowing that readers are going to take any piece that you give them and develop it themselves,
right,
and then, you know, pretty much bring it back into your work, into your fandom, it's important for the author to know where they stand on that. And I can give you a whole rant about authors that I don't think have done that well and have incorporated bad reader suggestions into their works. Not going to go there, though. But knowing for yourself where you might want to take something, what you can build on. I know you've talked about maybe building some short stories or other novels off of this series. If we know certain things about the background of those characters, we will be able to... We are you. We'll be able to...
Yeah.
In another way.
Right. Well, because it is, like you mentioned, it's the little details. You wouldn't think of snow seems like something so small, but for someone who's never seen snow before, that's not so small anymore. And that, not only is that a big thing for them, but now that's taking something that seems so little and commonplace. It didn't need a major plot twist for snow to be like a life-changing moment for that character. So that is a good point about that. The more you know about it and the more these little details... It also makes sense if you're writing fantasy and if you say, okay, magic is accessible to everyone, that's going to change the way they interact versus magic is not accessible to everyone. Because then the reader's not like, why didn't they use magic here? Well, because not everyone can use magic. So it does
Honestly, I like the second book, Lies of Golden Shaw. It's still my favorite book of the series.
Yeah.
And it pains me that like, I look online at reviews and people don't like it as much. And it's still my favorite one. But yeah, we did a lot of the magic development of your world in that one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think a lot of people didn't get it. Like with the name thing, that she's changing her character, like according to which name she's going to. So I think a lot of people just saw her as, undecided versus understanding that she was actually making decisive decisions about herself with each name that she was going according to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, there's nothing to do about that because you could try as much as you want to try to develop a story that you make sure the reader understands, but some readers will get in, some don't, I guess. I try not to think about it too much.
Because I am a proponent of the death of the author theory, which is once you write a book, you send it out to the world and people can do with it as they will.
Right.
So to actually chastise someone, J.K. Rowling, who keeps putting out updates and stuff, which is great for her. People love it.
Right.
It bothers me.
Yeah.
Like, no, you wrote it. Let everybody else decide what was going to happen to Ron and Hermione's marriage. Stop talking.
Someone told me that once. So, like, if once you put out your book, there's no upgraded versions of it. There's no anything else of it. Like, it's out and it's done, and then you have to move on. That's it. I was like, okay, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if you have one word for this, but what are certain elements that you think make up a good writer-editor relationship? I know some personalities just click, but what kind of stuff has to be there, though, for it to work out well?
Definitely open-mindedness. I can't come into a story and say, you know, you gave me this book and I want it to be a dark, angst-filled novel. I want to have ghosts. I want to have zombies in there. I'm going to make it as dark and evil as I can. And you say, no, I want it to be more gray-toned.
Right.
I can't come in and force you to go down the path that I want. And, you know, same goes for you in many ways as an author. You can't stonewall development. And I've had authors do that, where I say, hey, this doesn't make sense. And they just say, but that's what I want it to be. And I had a particular author that this happened with, and it was crazy. But, you know, they contradict themselves two pages apart. And I said, how do you, as an author who wrote this, figure out whether or not you're trying to go with this theme or this other theme? And we can pick one. You can do whatever you want, and we can pick one. We're just going to be consistent. And the guy was like, no, I wrote it like that. That's how I want it. But it doesn't make sense. It makes no sense what you're saying. And you just, you stonewall the entire thing.
Yeah. And as someone who's a reader, as soon as something doesn't make sense, you're pulled from the story, I think. So, yeah, making sense is actually very important.
Yeah.
Is there something you could say, I don't know, like, sort of as a fill a blank, like, I love it when authors do X, or I love authors who do X, or something that, especially authors that you're working with, or even just authors that you're reading?
I like when authors trust me.
that's actually very big.
Like, that is big. I've had authors who I had to email back and forth for a week before they said, oh, so what you mean by that is that if I say my character is suicidal, I can't also say that they love life and are looking forward to senior year and blah, 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 but they also hate their life and want to kill themselves. And if I have to pull teeth,
right,
it's agonizing. Whereas if I say, hey, this character seems odd, I want to develop this, and the author, honestly, even one of the best authors I've worked with.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't pay for that endorsement. Okay. Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so what do you mean by, you know, Ella is a passive person?
Right.
And I say, well, all of this happens and she does nothing. And you're like, oh, that's a good point. Let me think about that. That I appreciate.
Right.
That makes you awesome to work with.
Yay. Well, that also answered the flip side of that, because I was going to say, what do you hate, like, when authors do? But that, I guess when they don't trust you, would be, unless there's something else also over there.
I really, really hate when I fix grammar and then authors change it.
Oh, man.
Back to their incorrect grammar usage. That's really annoying, because it's a small thing, but it takes a lot of time to refine all of the little commas and periods and quotation marks and capitalizations in the
right.
book.
Right, right.
And then, like, I'll be scrolling through, because I don't go back. I do the first edit of all the grammar, and then I do a sweep on the second at the very end.
Right.
So I'm not going through the entire book every time looking for commas.
Right.
But I'll be scrolling through, and I'm like, oh, dang, I know I deleted that incorrect comma, so it's back. That is awful. That can add, like, days into an edit, just comparing. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. How about how long did it take you?
Yeah. A lot of rents.
Yeah, how long? About how long? Well, I don't know if you have an answer for this actually, because I could guess that it might depend. But about how long does it take you to do? I would say an average edit. I can't even know if readers will, if listeners will know what that means. Like one that doesn't that involves medium amount of developmental changes, or just a medium sweep. Are we talking about hours, minutes, or days for this sort of thing?
It's difficult. Most of us, at least at Melange, are doing this part-time, so
right.
a lot of us have other jobs and other commitments.
Right.
You know, I had a baby in December.
Yes.
So I don't have as much time as I've had 5 years ago.
Right.
And I also generally have a full-time work position in office, and then COVID happened.
Right.
So it's not something that I can say, oh, I spend 8 hours a day on this, and it takes me 3 days.
Right.
It's more of the first level of development, that first edit, I always assign myself about 3 weeks to a month to get through in the time that I have.
Wow.
And then a lot of it depends on how quickly an author can get back to me. I send them the edit, and then they can get back to me in a day.
Right.
Saying, oh, I went through everything, here it is. And then there's times where I'll send it to them, and they're like, look, I see it in my email, but I'm on a plane, I'm going to Florida for a week, I'm having a vacation, I'm not going to look at my work, I'll get back to you. And then this just adds time. And it can push off publication deadlines, because if I can't work on it with you, then we get stuck.
Right. I think a lot of people don't realize how much time goes into all this. But it's basically, even on a good day, or even if you could put 100% of time into it, it would still probably take a few months. At least a few weeks that would add up to a few months, because...
Not necessarily, honestly. I've done a full book edit. That was a summer during college. I did a full edit in like a month and a half.
Wow.
Like from beginning to end. Because I had all that time, and it was summer, so I guess the author I was working with also had some free time. But, you know, with the end of my Raptor series, I got assigned to it, I think, September in 2018. It took us over a year to finish the entire series.
Yeah, that was intense.
That was really crazy. So I came in, I was going for a new manuscript, and I saw Beautiful to Me, and I was like, oh, E.L. Tenenbaum, I've worked with her, that'll be fun. And then Nancy was like, oh, take the whole series.
Yeah, you did not know what you were getting into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, and the last book just released last week, or 2 weeks ago. No, last week, I think it was. The 12th. Whatever, May 12th, the last book just came out. Yeah, last week.
The last book is my second favorite. I really like Damien. He's a great character.
Yeah, that also was also a good... That one ended up being a good wrap-up, I think. Like a good return to the series. Yeah, I think we both agreed that we liked the second one and the fifth one the best, I think. That's just us, though. Everyone else will have to read it to find out.
Yeah, they get to decide. My mom, I'll tell you, she loves the second one.
Right.
And she also really likes Beautiful to Me. She loves it. She's like, it's so great because you see these two tropes of how romance develops, and beauty and self-confidence and all this stuff. And I love it. It's such a great, you know, parent-daughter conversational piece. And I'm like, okay, I appreciate that you like it, Mom.
Yeah.
It annoys me. I don't like almost any of the characters in that book, but okay.
That's funny.
You can like it. That's fine.
Also the acquisitions editor loves that one also. So it just shows how different readers, just different. Well, see, look, there's one for everyone in the series. See, we're five books, there's one for every kind of reader.
Yeah.
We're so good like that. Okay. Is there any last message that you want to put out there, either about editing or reading, or just tell everyone to just keep buying more books? No, just kidding. Or anything before we wrap this up? I don't know, anything else about editing or writing, or I don't know.
My daughter just came in the room.
Oh, hello.
I guess a parting thing that I would say to editors is, you know, if you're coming into this career path, one, it's changing a lot. A lot more of it is becoming online. A lot more of it is becoming commission-based. More of it is becoming, you know, little to no benefits because you're being hired piece by piece rather than as an employee, and that can be difficult if you either don't have a full-time or traditional job or a partner who is supporting you, you know, whatever works for you. That's just definitely something that people should be aware of as the industry is changing. And the other is that, you know, that same piece of advice that I was given when I was started out, that you are the first defense of the reader. And I very much believe that I am helping change people, because I know in my development as a person, books played a huge role in that. And
right.
I very much believe that good books, contrary to my high school English teacher who didn't believe that fantasy was, you know, real literature and highbrow.
Oh, really?
I think it helps. Yeah, that was a whole thing. I think it does change people. It really does. It shows people their own themes in their lives in different contexts, in similar contexts. People can relate to characters and worlds that are in fantasy differently than they relate to things that are placed in the modern age or in our world of Earth. And I very much see editing as helping those people to develop themselves and to get that wider world perspective that they might not otherwise get.
Right, right. Well, because, yeah, there's stuff that binds everyone, which has a lot to do with how you're making your characters, and then there's the setting that you put them in, which is going to be unique to so many people, right? Whether or not it's a fantasy world or in our world, the setting is always going to be a little bit different, but your characters, there's going to be truisms about them that are just the same, which is how you can relate to them, basically. Yeah. Right. Very good. Thank you so much, Miriam. Thanks so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to help.
Oh, so much. It's such a pleasure. So much fun.